Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin, and I'm so thrilled to have a dear, longtime friend. We're not going to call each other old friends, right?
I think we are. You can say that.
Old friends? Okay. Susan Raff is in the house. And like I said, Susan, you and I go way back. We'll talk about some of our experiences and maybe even a few horror stories from back in the day. But you're currently, you know, still kicking it, still doing a great job. You're at WFSB Channel 3 as the political reporter and so much more. And so I really appreciate you coming here. We're going to talk about a few things today. The recent few funeral of Governor Rell that just transpired this week, and you know, just other things. Let's just catch up and let's let our listeners know who you are and what this feisty little lady is all about. So thanks for being here.
You're very welcome. You know, I just realized I've been at Channel 3 now 28 years.
Wow.
So that is a really long time, especially now. And when I went to Governor Rell's funeral this week, I was really reminded of that because I met a lot of politicians that I hadn't seen in a while and people. And so it is really nice to be recognized, but not necessarily because people see me and know who I am, but maybe because of the work that I've done. So that's very rewarding sometimes for me.
It is. And I think you've got a reputation. You know, some people, when I tell my clients, you know, they say, who's covering the story today? And I say, Susan Raff. And we say, uh-oh. You know, and I say, uh-oh, because you know what? You're one of the, I'm going to say it, the few, that really has the legacy, that does the legwork, that gets both sides of the story. But you know what? You're not going to pull the wool over your eyes either. I mean, you do your job and you do it well, and you have for a very long time. And I can't believe that you've been there that long, because then you were at Channel 30 previously, where you and I worked together for how long were you there?
2 years. But I think what you say is so important because, you know, journalism is very important. Mm-hmm. And especially now, because a lot of journalists are being criticized, and some for good reasons and some not, because, I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of editorializing going on. But we need journalists and reporters and people to watch what people are doing on school boards, in our state government. And without that, and without those checks and balances, then we're really in trouble. So I think we need to support journalists. journalism and good journalism. And I think it's a time for many journalists and people to take a look at themselves and realize what they're doing and do it in the right way, you know, and not have an agenda. I mean, let's face it, many of us do have some kind of a bias when we go in. I mean, it's hard to kind of leave that at the door.
You're right.
Although I really do try to make an effort, excuse me, at that, because I feel that's very important. And I think what I've learned in my career is that it's never black and white. There's always this gray area, right? Mm-hmm. So you listen to one side and they make a good argument. You listen to the other side and that's a good argument. But somewhere, it's somewhere in the middle. And I think you have to let the people tell the story and let the viewers and the listeners decide for themselves what's happening.
You would hope that you're in that middle road, you know, but it is getting tougher. And you talk about checks and balances, and you know, you look at the Hartford Courant, you look at so many of these newspapers, you know, that all these people have been bought out or laid off, and you know, the good ones, a lot of them are gone, you know, the John Lenders and the people like you that covered the Capitol and had that wealth of, it's not only knowledge, but isn't half of your job, you mentioned it earlier, relationships. You know, it's having access to those people that are going to give you what you need and help the public understand what the issues are.
Right. I think it's very sad about what's happened at the Courant. Mm. I don't know the figure offhand how many reporters they had, but a lot more. And in fact, there's no central location anymore. It's, you know, the Hartford Courant is really no more as far as, you know, a newsroom. I think they have a handful of reporters left. And it's still, I believe, the oldest continuously operating newspaper in this country. And it is very unfortunate that you don't have the John Lenders and those people. And I always had a respect for John Lender. And I knew that when he walked into a room, people were worried, right? Because like, what is he doing? And, you know, because he was really smart. And he was also very polite and courteous. You know, he was not someone who let his ego get ahead of him, which I always respected him for that. But yes, those type of journalists are disappearing more and more as this business changes for many reasons. And I think that's unfortunate.
It is. And now John is so happy being a grandfather and loving being around his grandkids. So life has gone on for John, and we hope he's doing well. So let's talk about this week and the coverage of Governor Rell's funeral service. I mean, it was a lot. I watched some of the live coverage here from the office on the television. What was your assignment that day? What were you told by the desk, if you will? what was it? What were you set out to reveal? She was such a great woman.
Yeah, she really was. And I covered her quite a bit as a lieutenant governor and governor. Always very kind, very classy. And in fact, sadly, I had texted her the day that she passed away. And I didn't know that she had been sick. And it was to ask her about Linda McMahon, who she appointed to the Board of Education many years back when Jody Rell was governor. So it helped me to have a sense of who she was to cover the funeral. And it was unusual for them to have a laying in state. That's something that just doesn't happen with a lot of governors. The last in recent history was Ella Grasso. Mm-hmm. And then I think in 2011, there was a former state speaker, Nelson Brown, who lay in state. He had been a lobbyist for a few years, but it's very unusual. So I covered that part, and they opened up the Capitol from 10 to 2 so that people, in addition to politicians, the public could come. There weren't a whole lot of public, and which was a little bit disappointing, but it is during the week.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some, and I interviewed people who hadn't met her. I interviewed one state employee who said, no, I never had a chance to meet her, but I always respected her. And I think the state will really be so pleased that she came at that time. You know, when John Rowland was being impeached and then indicted and was going off to prison, she stepped in at a time when people really had a very bad feeling about state government and didn't trust anybody. So she really kind of righted the ship and then not only served out the remainder of Rowland's term, but ran on her own. And then after laying in state, there was a funeral service at the Cathedral of St. Joseph, which is...
It didn't look very full.
No, but you have to keep in mind it's the largest state in, a church in Connecticut.
Okay.
Largest.
Okay.
It's where the archdiocese is.
Right.
She was also not a Catholic. She was a Christian. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I heard from someone from Brookfield, where she was from, who said, why did they have the service there? It wasn't at Jody Rell's church. I don't think they could have accommodated that many people. And, you know, it is near the state capitol, and it is a little bit more convenient for a lot of people to come. So the service was there. And I thought that Michael Rell and Meredith were fantastic.
They were. And I got to tell you, even the governor did a great job.
Yes.
You know, he did a great job. I thought that his words were very heartfelt, and I think in these situations, hopefully people put politics aside. Doesn't matter if you're an R or D.
He opened the door for a relationship with her. He didn't really know her all that well mm-hmm. when she was lieutenant governor and then governor. But since then, he has invited her every year to the governor's residence for a holiday party. And I actually saw her last year because in addition to coming to the governor's holiday party, she comes to the holiday party for the press corps, which I'm a member of, on the fourth floor. And I saw her last year. And we were all so happy to see her. And, even though, yes, she is the former governor, she really just enjoyed coming and seeing us and kind of catching up with things that have been happening. So she was very much a genuine human being. And I think people saw that.
Yes. And, I'm curious because you were out there with live coverage. I mean, how many live shots did you do during the course of the day?
Lots of them, five or six.
Five or six live shots. And, folks, that's a lot. Did people kind of come up to you? Because here you are with a camera. Here you are with a microphone. Everybody wants their 15 seconds of fame. Did people approach you and say, can I talk about Jody Rell? I mean, did the right people approach you or how did that work?
I think it kind of just happened organically. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of people. And I think for those who came, and keep in mind, in addition to her genuine sincerity, she was someone who had strong beliefs about things, but she was also able to work across the aisle. So Republicans and Democrats came to the Capitol, a lot of politicians. And it was really, it spans such a long time frame of people to see each other and reminisce about the time that they were there. Mm-hmm. I heard Len Fasano, the former Senate minority leader, say, I miss this place and I miss her. And it was a good feeling to see politicians kind of let down their guard a little bit and join together to remember Jody Rell.
And just be real people, right?
And be real people.
Yes. Well, you did a fantastic job. Great coverage. And I know it's a lot of work. And so let's talk about what else you've been up to. You've been in this business for a long time. You've also been adjunct faculty over at Central Connecticut State University in their communications department. This was your first year. I had the pleasure of being a guest speaker at your class. How's that going?
Well, first of all, if anyone's looking for a guest speaker, I would highly recommend you because you were terrific.
Thank you.
And my students really liked you. And so that's very important. Yes, it was something that I had thought about. And in fact, I'll be honest, one of my fellow reporters is teaching at Capital Community College. And I thought, well, why not? Let's challenge myself.
As if you don't need more to do.
As if I don't need more to do. And it is a lot. And I think that the biggest challenge at first, so when Central called me, and I hadn't heard from them in a long time, one of the professor teaching this communications course decided at the last minute he didn't want to do it. So they asked me, and I had about 5 months, 5 weeks to prepare. And that was not a lot. And, technology is not necessarily my friend, right? We didn't grow up in that generation.
Nope,
definitely not. And it was hard. And my daughter, thank God, who graduated Penn State recently, was able to help me do Blackboard and all that kind of stuff. So the technology part was the most challenging. And yes, I was a little nervous. I remember the first day I walked into the class, I'm like, I'm standing here. And I'm talking to these people, and these kids, some of them, they're interested, and a lot of them are like, who are you? And
yep.
Right. But at the end of the day, I felt it was important to engage students and help them communicate, which I think is not always great with a lot of young people today because of all the social media, right? They don't want to pick up the phone. They don't want to have that eye-to-eye conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the pandemic contributed to that. So that was my goal. And I think that it's worked, and I wanted the students to look forward to coming to class instead of being disappointed or like, oh God, I don't really want to go to that class tonight, right? And, you know, the student body has changed. You know, these are students, you know, they're maybe they're working, they're putting themselves through college. I had one student who was on the GI Bill because he had been in the service. So it's a different group of people. I have someone who's graduating this year, and then I have two high school students.
That were amazing, by the way.
Amazing.
Right. I mean, I was most impressed by those high school students, I got to tell you. And there's a reason they're sitting, you know, at Central Connecticut State University taking those classes. But I also think that that's not what's being taught in journalism courses today, is that you need to hear from the people that are doing it day to day on the streets, sharing your experiences, sharing your, you know, the goods and the bads and the uglies of the industry. And more importantly, those communication skills. I mean, you can't learn what you do every day in a book. You got to hear it. And I just think it was they were spot on bringing you into that classroom. So your semester's almost up. Would you do it again?
Absolutely. In fact, they signed me up. I don't know if they even asked. They said, oh, well, you're teaching in the spring. And so I think the sad part of it for me is that I've just gotten to know these students.
Uh-huh.
That was the other thing. It was a fairly big class at the beginning, 28 students, right? That's a lot. And so then there were some who, you know, dropped out. But my goal was trying to figure out, okay, like when I would walk in, I could call them by their name and not butcher their name. And it took a while. But anyway, now I know them. I've gotten to know them. And I'm kind of sad because now I have to get ready to greet a whole new group of students. But I have learned a lot during the way. And one of the things I feel it's important to share, and that is the other challenge is getting the kids to do the work. And that's something that I just didn't really expect when I came in. And so I didn't really have it written out in my syllabus, like, okay, if you're 2 days late, you're 2 weeks late. Some of these kids just don't hand in the work. And I don't know if it's the pandemic. I don't know if it's maybe teachers are like, well, whenever you get it done, as long as you get it done before the end of the semester, we're good. And I'm like, well, that's not good for me. And I think to your point about reality and having someone from the outside of the academic world come in and teach them, you know what? It's due now. Your boss says, this is what I want, and this is when I want it, and you have to do it then.
Well, and you learn that in your industry. A deadline is a deadline. If there is, you know, I always say, if you're 10 minutes early, you're 10 minutes late, right? I mean, there are deadlines. You've got black holes to fill. You've got obligations. People are counting on you. And, you know, just this laissez-faire kind of attitude of, well, I'll get to it when I get to it, if I get to it. There's got to be consequences for that. I even find that in the young people that I hire here at Baldwin Media is that sometimes they just don't get it. You know, my recent experience with this very talented young man, videographer, and we're working with law enforcement, and, you know, he didn't have transportation. Some days I'd pick him up and take him home, but he smelled like weed. I'm like, listen, dude, we can't be going out and working with law enforcement, or really anybody for that matter, when you've been smoking weed at 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, had to let him go, and he didn't get it. You know, so good for you for teaching these kids. You know, I think what's most important is the life lessons. The life lessons that you can teach these kids and the reality check that they get when they're in a classroom, because nobody's doing that.
And some of them get it. I've had a couple of students come up to me and say, I understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, and it's not just, you know, teaching them on time. And, you know, and television is a really kind of an intense experience, in the sense that if you're 5 or 6 or 10 seconds late, guess what? You know what? You're not on TV that day. You've missed your live shot. You've messed up the producer's show. And that's an issue. And you're probably going to hear from your news director, who's going to say, what happened to you?
Right.
So, you know, I come from I'm always cognizant of what time it is and being late. The other thing about presentation, about looking people in the eye, and the attire, which is also something that I think really kind of suffered during the pandemic. They're making their final presentation next week in a speech. And I said, you know, dress the part, be professional.
Dress for success.
You know, please don't come to class in your pajamas.
Well, some of the people in news today need to have that lesson, I got to tell you. I've also seen a huge decline. And, you know, I get it. If you're out there covering a snowstorm, you're going to dress appropriately. But some of the things that I'm seeing with some of these people on our local television stations these days, I just sit there and scream. You do not want to watch a newscast with me.
No, and I think, you know, without being too judgmental, I think that credibility is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I cover the state capitol, there for. I'm with people who are very professional and wear suits and jackets and like. But I think, yes, we've lost that, this pajama. I see people walking around sometimes in the newsroom with slippers. I'm thinking, right? I don't know if that's such a good idea. But anyway, I think everyone could learn and dress the part that you want, necessarily the part that you have.
Absolutely. Again, Ann Baldwin here with Susan Raff, a dear friend. We go back to the good old days at Channel 30. We won't tell many of those stories because they're not necessarily G-rated, but we had some fun back in the day,
It's a good thing we didn't have cell phones back
then.
Oh,
my gosh. We didn't have cell phones, and we didn't have cameras, you know, watching our every move and recording our every move. But one thing I just learned about you, and then you came in today for this interview, is that you grew up in the television business and that your dad worked for CBS News. I did not know that.
Yes. My father, Len Raff, was a pioneer in this business. So when he started at CBS News, the evening news was only 15 minutes.
Wow.
Right? And at that time, they did not think that there was an appetite for more news than that. And look where we are today. So my dad worked under Murrow. He worked under Cronkite. He worked under Rather. He traveled all over the world. To probably about two-thirds of the country. Now, in those days, you know, there weren't stringers, right? So CBS News sent people to cover stories. He was in Iran during the hostage crisis. He was at Three Mile Island. But take you back years ago, my father was one of the first Americans to go to China with Nixon and Ford.
Wow.
Right? And I have film of this. And it's really exciting. I recently donated some film to the CBS Library, to their archives, and because it's 18 millimeter, and I have no way. And they had to clean it because, you know, he had kept it in the reels in the basement. There was water. I don't know. There was mildew. So they took the time. They cleaned it all for me. But the stories that he told, and I remember one when he was in China on the Great Wall, and they went back to the hotel room. And keep in mind, I mean, Americans were not in China. He was one of the first Americans. And everyone, they had used some kind of disinfectant on the toilets. And so all the CBS News crew people had red behinds. Oh. And they called it the baboon syndrome.
Oh, that's funny.
But really, and in serious, he was just someone who had so many stories and traveled all over the world. He had worked at CBS for over 50 years.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and what we saw, you know, in the pictures and his stories. And my only regret, and I'm going to give some advice to people out there.
Okay, good.
You know, and you would think someone in the media business would have done more. But listen to their stories. Mm. Record those stories. Use your phone. Take video. You know, my kids were very young then because my father was older. I mean, he was like 40 when I was born. So my grandkids or my kids didn't really get to know him. So if there's any advice about that, that's what I would do. But yes, growing up in the news business, and it gave me an edge because I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I went to college.
You did? At what age?
Oh, in high school.
So did I. Isn't that funny? Yeah, it's just like people would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I think from sixth grade on, I said, I want to do the news. And I never deviated from that. Do you think you took a lot of, did you rely on your dad for advice when you were in the business?
Sometimes. I mean, he was an editor, so it was a little bit different. But yes, I mean, we talked about the business. And back then, it was so much different. You know, people sat around the television every night at, you know, in the evening news and watched TV. And CBS was such a standard. And we talked about it. And I encourage anyone who goes to New York, if they get a chance to go to the CBS Broadcast Center on 57th Street, my father's picture is up on the wall. He and Tommy Miklas were the only editors for the evening news. So it's quite an honor to grow up in the business under someone like that.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And you've always got that in your memories. So what else are you up to? You know, time is little, right? You're pretty busy. You know, it's one of those things I think people don't understand, too, is, you know, your day may start at 9 o'clock in the newsroom, and you think it's going to go to 5 or maybe go to 6, but then you're live in Bridgeport, and that's an hour away. And before you know it, you're getting home at 7:30 at night, go to bed, and you get up and do it again the next day. I mean, people used to always say, and they still ask me, do you miss it? And, you know, I got to say no. I don't miss it because it was all consuming, right? I don't know. It's hard to turn yourself off, isn't it, at night when you go home?
It is a long day, you know, and it's funny. Even some of my friends now will call me at like 4:45. And depending on what mood I'm in, I'm like, why are you calling me now? This is a terrible time.
Right.
You know, because most people, you know, work 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, right? And then take, you know, people who work remote. See, that to me, that's a hard, I can't even wrap my...
Me neither.
I can't, right?
I can't.
That you would sit in your house and be able to, you know. So, you know, yes, it's an intense job. I like it. I like covering the Capitol. I'm not sure if I were a general assignment reporter, I would have enjoyed the ride as long as I have. I just, you know, but it also comes with a challenge, the state Capitol, because you really have to know things.
Yeah.
And because you can't fool the state lawmakers, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I stand here in front of a burning building and I talk about things, the average person doesn't really know, right?
Right.
So if I'm at the state capitol and I don't understand the concept of a bill or I get something wrong, that's a credibility issue. So then you're not as respected and people won't come to you as much. So it's a little taxing on your brain day in and day out sometimes covering the issues and the process through the legislature and making sure you get it right. Any advice, I think, is always to reach out to people. People love to help you. They do. Mm-hmm. When I first started covering the Capitol, Mayor Jarjura of Waterbury was a state representative. And it was right about the time that Roland was... getting investigated. And I remember going to the Capitol and I said, I don't really know anybody. Can you please help me? And he took me under his wing and he gave me, you know, advice and the stability that I needed to keep going.
You know, and that's probably, you're still grateful for that today.
Oh, very much. Reach out. Always ask people because people want to help you.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. So if you had it to do over again with just a couple of minutes left, would you get back into this business again?
Yes, I would have to say so. I think that the business has changed for a variety of reasons. There are so many other ways to watch news, right? And so ratings now become this draining thing, you know, and we're always trying to reinvent the wheel and come up with all of these ways to attract viewers and keep the ones that we have. I like learning something new every day. Mm-hmm. I think that's what drives me to work every day. And I've met some really wonderful people. I really have. And not necessarily all the politicians, but there are people in this world who do things for all the right reasons, who, you know, despite adversity, and they get up every day and they help other people, they raise money for other people, they volunteer. So it's those people you have to focus on, not necessarily those who are doing bad things. But absolutely, I think I would. I would have to do it maybe a different way, but so far it seems to work well.
Well, you're wonderful, and you said you've had a chance to meet great people, and great people have had a chance to meet you. I got to tell you, you're one of the few out there that I truly respect, and I have all the respect for you, and I know a lot of people do. So, Susan Raff, thanks for being. I could talk about this all day long, right? This is just right up my alley.
Well, you're pretty wonderful, too. I think that, you know, you and I started this business together. And I think some of those, you know, things that you learned along the way as far as being a reporter and an anchor have helped you become successful in your current role with communications and public relations. And you're a good person, and I want to thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you, honey. Really appreciate it. Susan Raff from WFSB Channel 3 and so much more. That should not define her, but it does for this conversation. And on behalf of myself, Ann Baldwin, we couldn't do it without you. We want to thank you for tuning in to this edition of News You Can Use right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.